हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सहवीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्रीहाद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Avihotra continued, on page 57, one who desires to quickly cut the knot of false ego, which binds the spirit's soul, should worship the Supreme Lord, Keshava, by the regulations found in the Vedic literatures, such as the Tantras. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur elaborates, Karma Yoga was directed at foolish people. Now hear the instructions for the wise. This verse encourages people to worship the Lord directly. One should desire to cut the ahankara, hridaya grantim, of the atma, which is different from the body, paratmanaha. One should worship the Lord according to the rules of the agamas. Right? So agama means that which comes from the Veda. So tantra is just the practical point. You have mantra and you have tantra. So tantra means the practical application. So the agamas, they're tantras. Right? Now, amongst those, then some are called tantras, some are called pancharatras, some are called vaikanas, like this. But they're all practical application of the Vedic literature. Sri Avihotra continued, right? So before it was more about doing your karmas that you're attached to. Now he's talking about more being involved in the direct activities, right? Like you see, Krishna says in the Gita, first just surrender to him, that's your best. Right? If you can't do that, then you follow the rules and regulations of devotional service of the pancharatric system, so the agamas. Right? And if you can't do that, then you engage your activities in his service. Right? And that according to whatever it is that you like to do, your particular varnas, ashrams, all these things, you perform those activities, but keep Krishna in mind when you're doing that. Right? So then the karma yoga. You can't do that. Be a nice guy, open hospitals, do good work like that. And so just be a karmi, right? Instead of a karma yogi. And if you can't do that, then you can be a mayavadi because he's detached from the world and trying to, uplift himself and all that. But better than that is, practically engaging the senses. Better than that is that being engaged in the Lord's service. So like that. So in other words, your last option is being a mayavadi. Right? So things aren't that bad.
Any specific tantra that we refer to?
Any specific? Means all the pancharatras that we follow. Like Gotamiya Tantra, we use that. The Hayashirsha Pancharatra. Like these are what we use. Sri Avihotra continued, having obtained the mercy of a spiritual master who reveals to the disciple the injunctions of the Vedic literatures, the devotee should worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead in the particular personal form of the Lord the devotee finds most attractive. Footnote 25. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakura assigns verse 47 and 48 to Bhagavat Arkarmichi Mala, chapter 12 entitled Devotional Service in Practice, Sadhana Bhakti, which is in the Abhideya section of the Thakura's book. So, here. After cleansing oneself, purifying the body by pranayama, bhuta-shuddhi and other processes, and marking the body with sacred tilak for protection, One should sit in front of the deity and worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The devotee should gather whatever ingredients for worshiping the deity are available. Make ready the offerings, the ground, his mind, and the deity. Sprinkle his sitting place with water for purification, and prepare the bathing water and other paraphernalia. The devotee should then place the deity in his proper place, both physically and within his own mind. Concentrate his attention, and mark the deity's heart and other parts of the body with tilak. Then he should worship with the appropriate mantra. Right, so he's going through the whole pancharatric process here. This is how the argument explained. So we see the pancharatric lifestyle the Prabhupada's given us and the worship of the deity. Then that's what's being recommended here. So first Prabhupada started with the Bhagavat, just chanting and all that, as we saw the previous brothers were recommending, like that. Then when devotees were having difficulty in doing that all the time, then he introduced the deity worship and that regular activity, because I think, I'm not sure what year that came, I think 1970. Before that, they'd go out in Harinams, be out late at night, get up in the morning, chant their japa, do some reading and all that, take prasad. Then they would go out and do Harinam. So they do 10, 12 hours of Harinam a day, like this. And so that's what they did. And then when he found that devotees weren't studying, you know, they didn't have that regular understanding of the philosophy, then he introduced the full pancharatric system that we are following now, in which we have the regulated classes morning and evening and all these other kind of aspects. Right? And so, yeah. And then when he saw what time that devotees wanted to go, that wasn't taking care of all of their, wasn't absorbing them all the time and that, then he started talking about the communities and what has been previously mentioned about the karma yoga. You know, the communities and performing their karmas and all that kind of thing, but connecting it to Krishna. So you see, he started with basically the Bhagavat, then when that went down to the pancharatric, you know, introduced that because the Bhagavat still remains, and then to fill out for a wider range of devotees, then introduce the Vedic. Right? But as we see, is that when you go, as you go down, and that means you're introducing more of the, condition, the engagement of the conditioned nature because of our attachment to it, then you need more and more the Vedic rules and regulations, right? Because that's why then he explained before, you have to know what is karma, what is akarma, and what is vikarma. So then to not do the Vedic things and try to replace them with modern, and at the same time as not be engaged in the service of the Lord, because the consideration is not about that. You know, it's about my conditioning. By not using the Vedic rules, it's dangerous. Because the modern lifestyle, what regulates, means according to the modern, you know, first world lifestyle, right? Someone situated, you know, okay. Let's just take the average, the middle class, and they're doing okay. They don't have too much. They're not rich, but they don't have, and there's no lack. Mm-hmm. What's the regulation of getting up in the morning? When do they get up? What's the rule? Is there a rule? Is there a time? No. When they get up, is there any rule what they should do? Do they need to brush their teeth? Can they eat breakfast in bed? Do they just go straight drink their coffee? You know, I mean, we've heard about that they run a comb through their hair, or they say a little prayer for someone that's important to them, like that, before they do these things. But, you know what I'm saying? But what's the rule? What do they eat? Do they eat? What do they eat? How much do they eat? You understand? I mean, generally you see that they'll, unless they're, you know, because we talked about this group, so then they generally will go to work. So the only thing regulating their getting up in the morning is what time they have to go to work. And then at work, you know, what do they do? How do they behave? How are they supposed to behave with others in the office, with the boss, with people related to the boss, the company itself, the facilities of the company? Is there any rules that are given by the society? No, the boss may say, you know, don't do this or that, but there's no rules in society. Then, after work, what are they supposed to do? Is there any rules? No. When they go home, any rules? Do they just go in and sit on the couch? Do they go upstairs? They go in the kitchen and see what their wife is doing? Is their wife in the kitchen? Or are they the one in the kitchen? Their wife is walking in the door. I mean, what is there any, nothing? When do they go to sleep? How do they sleep? You know? Does that make sense? There's no rules. Nothing. So what will regulate the life to create progress? Because only with regulation can you control the senses. Only with regulation can you, minimize attachment. So the modern lifestyle has zero regulation. As soon as you say there's zero, the people say, no, there is. But if you look at it, what is? Be nice. Don't eat people. Right? Something, something. That's it. In food, the only restriction is don't eat people. Literally. I mean, that's the pure Catholic diet. The only restriction is no people. Right? And that includes your mother-in-law, even though you may not count her that way, but it does. That's it. So there isn't anything. So the whole point is that kind of lifestyle, be that non-Vedic lifestyle, then has nothing in it to regulate you to create, improvement in your life. Before, it was regulated by religion. But by the modern kind of way of thinking, the first thing to go is anything that has authority in it. And by authority going out, it leaves room for speculation, for sense gratification, for everybody to be that quote-unquote individual that they just do whatever they like. So in other words, you're free to be totally self-centered as long as your self-centeredness doesn't bother the other guy too much. And that's kind of it, in a nutshell. Did we miss out on anything? Yes? No? No, okay. So that's the whole point, is that's why then if you don't have that spontaneous natural love for Krishna, that's consistent, that you'll always be engaged in His service. Not just the moments here and there. The moments in here, there, you have some spontaneity. It's not called spontaneous devotional service. It's when it's constant, it's called spontaneous devotional service. Does that make sense?
Then when we preach, we usually start with the Bhagavad, because if we start giving them the regs, the regulations, then it becomes very difficult because they're not in a position to accept any kind of restriction.
Yes.
So then we give them chanting, prasad.
Yes, of course.
And then we slowly and gradually introduce.
It naturally comes, because if they have faith, then they take up the association of devotees. And the association of devotees, then you come to Bhajana Kriya. That's just naturally how it comes. Okay. So here when it says karma yoga is directed at the foolish, you have to understand that means where it's more about karma and not so much about yoga. Right? But the point is that karma yoga, by practicing it in good associate, will bring you very quickly up to the standard. Right? Does that make sense? Yes. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. Preparing or making suitable property obtained. Oh. Preparing or making suitable properly obtained. Articles. Oh, okay. I get it. Making suitable means they're what's, recommended. They're properly obtained. It means you didn't just go and snick them from your neighbor's backyard. Yata labdha. Articles like flowers by removing insects, earth by cleaning, mind by concentration, and the deity by cleaning and rubbing with unguents. He should prepare vessels of padya, argya, achman, and madhuparka. And so that's just the standard things. These aren't ritualistic, right? Ritualistic has already been discussed before. So we can understand by our previous, 5 minutes, discussion of what kind of ritual and rules are there in modern society, and we came up with only one, right? Like that. It means if you want to extend it, okay, you're not supposed to kill people, you know, you shouldn't walk, jaywalk, you know, should go across at the crossing, stop at red lights, you know, go at green lights, not speed, you know, like that. But who makes those rules? The government, right? The man makes those rules. The people don't make those rules. Right? It's because of the people who are unregulated, government has to make these rules. Right? Otherwise, they'd kill each other. Like that. Unless you're pious enough, like in India, there's no rules on the road, and somehow or another, no one dies. Have you ever seen, like in Calcutta, you ever seen an accident? You just don't see them.
Because it's crowded, Maharaj.
No, but if it was crowded like that in America, and there was no rules, people would die, literally. Means, you remember, it was the Kuwait War, right? And so, then in the West, there was petrol shortages because they got their petrol from Kuwait. And then in India, there were also petrol shortages. Not because they get the petrol from there, just the petrol guys saw that it's an opportunity to raise the prices. Because it used to be, I think it was about 7 or 8 rupees a liter petrol. And when that came, they raised it to 15, 16. You know, and it was brought out in the news that no, India gets all its petrol from itself or local or from Russia. That has nothing to do with the Middle East. So there's no reason for that. So it's just a scam by the, like that. So people like in America and that, we're waiting in lines in their cars to get petrol. You know, right down the street, and they're all sitting there getting out of their cars, talking with each other, having a great time, and when they get up there, they get their petrol and go. In America, they're in lines, and everybody's got something important. I got to get to this appointment. I got to. They're cutting lines, and that people were actually shot. Literally. You pull in front of them, guys pull out guns, walk up to your car, shoot you, and then drive around you and get their petrol. I'm not exaggerating. There may not have been many instances, but the point is this is what happens. Right? So it's not just means the marketplace at night, it's crowded. The lights go off. Everyone just sits there and waits for the lights to go on. It's happened that I've heard of twice in America, like in New York, the lights have gone off for like 30 minutes. During that time, $1 billion worth of damage and thievery happens. People go in and just take racks of clothes and anything they can get their hand on is gone. And somehow or another, they're the civilized ones, and these are the savages that are sitting here in these funky little markets and driving on their, you know, crazy roads with no lines on them in Calcutta. Right? So it has nothing to do with there's too many people. Right?
I think she needs to go to America.
Yeah, and then you'd see. It's not. I remember when one of the boys, when he got bigger, then he was taking, he went for a preaching program in Europe. And then he came back, I said, how did you like it? He says, I wasn't impressed. He says, the way everybody else was talking about the West compared to India, everything's made out of gold. And I got there, it was nothing special at all. You know, I says, I don't know what they're talking about. No? Yeah.
Even there is no, the owner is not there in the shops many times in my media.
Yeah, nobody takes anything, or he's like, it's just, you know, you just wait until somebody comes. You sit there and wait for him to come back, right? You know, you may get annoyed and grumpy, and this is India, and where's the guy, and all this kind of stuff, but, you know. So the point being is that when you have a society that has no regulation, there's nothing they can't do. So there, the rules are just to keep them from being crazy. In India, the rules are so that they are uplifted. Right? That's the whole idea. That's the Vedic system. So now, in a society that has no rules, any rule seems like too many rules. So when Prabhupada says we're not interested in ritualistic ceremonies, they'll take any rule as ritual. But that's the problem, is that when you have no rules, you can't even understand what is ritualistic. Right? You know, for these Karmakanda yagyas, then the Soma Yagya, it takes 9 months to set up the Yagya Kund itself and get things ready. Then you can start. You know, what do we take? We go in and take, you know, depending upon who it is, anywhere from 10 minutes to a few hours to set up. And then we'll say, oh, so ritualistic. It's like, You don't know what ritual is.
You know. Compared to no ritual, that's ritualistic. Huh? Compared to no ritual.
Yeah, no, that is that's my point. So that's the difficulty, is that then we apply the terms where Prabhupada's throwing out the smarta rituals, and then we apply that rule onto the Vaishnava rituals that are given by Prabhupada, sanctioned by the Acharyas, and here Paramahamsas are sanctioning it. Hari Bhakti Vilas Sanatan Goswami. I was going to say Hari Bhakti Vilas Hari Das Thakur. No. Yeah. So that's the whole thing. These are just standard ways of doing things, and if you accept it, it just becomes the standard lifestyle. You know, or if you don't want to do that, then chant like Hari Das Thakur, chant Hare Krishna all day. No meetings, no management. You know, just chant. That's also okay. But if you're going to come down to the platform where you're not going to do that, then you have to start doing this. And if you don't want to get so much in the deity worship, you just want to be involved in other secondary aspects, that's where Varnashram comes in. It has rules. So human being means that you can accept these forms. Why? We saw before how he said they're all to elevate you to pure bhakti. That's the only purpose of them. There is no other purpose. Okay. Smart as they follow it because they want material benefits. Devotees follow it because it's given by the Lord. It pleases the Lord. Right? I mean, the yogic Brahmins in Vrindavan, right? Now, there's a chapter on them, and at the end of the chapter, it doesn't work out so good for them, right? So there's some weakness in their behavior. What is the weakness that Krishna and Balaram and the Acharyas bring out? Is it that they didn't have proper paraphernalia? Were they not clean? Were they too ritualistic? Were they doing all these things? No, they didn't want to offer it to Krishna. But being Brahmins and following all that, there's no fault. It's not doing that for Krishna, that's the fault. You understand? Duryodhana, as a king, is he at fault? Right? He's a good manager. But he's not willing to worship Krishna and respect the Vaishnavas. Right? Therefore, then there's a problem. Does that make sense? So we see is the problem is not in the rules that they're following the Vedic rules, that gets in the way of devotional service. That if they're attached to these rules and attached to that, that's what's a problem for devotional service. Does that make sense? You need a blanket to sit on? Okay, Sri Avihotra concluded, one should worship the deity along with each of the limbs of his transcendental body, his weapons such as the Sudarshan Chakra, his other bodily features, and his personal associates, right? So what we saw in the first part then is approaching the temple, you know, Abhigamana, then preparing the paraphernalia, Upadana, then bring all the different things, the things with the mind and all the other things beforehand, the yoga, and then the ija, the actual worship. So in these first ones, he described all the first four aspects of the Panchanga Puja. Now in this one, he's describing the last one, the fifth one, the Swadhyaya. So in Swadhyaya, that includes all the concluding activities. So that means you worship the deity, now his paraphernalia, his weapons, his associates, like that, each of the transcendental, then worship each of the transcendental aspects of the Lord by his own mantra, right? So then you're doing that, then washing the feet, because then you have the argyas and stuff like that. Scented water to wash the mouth, you know, you finished all these things, you wash his mouth and all that, then you put him in a place for resting. Fine clothing, ornaments, fragrant oils, valuable necklaces, unbroken barley corns, flower garlands, incense, and lamps. Having thus completed the worship in all its aspects, right? So you've done the 16 items, you've concluded that, and then you have items all through the day, so you have the 64. Does this make sense? This is the Pancharatrik science in a nutshell, right? So that's what they're giving here. We'll come across more of it, detail, in the Uddhava Gita, so don't worry.
Shodash Upachar is just a part of it, of this entire process.
Shodash Upachar is in the Ija part, it's in Ija of the five parts. To do Ija, you have to have preliminaries. To do preliminaries, you have to have paraphernalia. To have paraphernalia, you have to actually be ready yourself. Get up and take a bath.
Can you please tell the 4 points that you mentioned, you know, Agama and the 4 points that you mentioned in Sanskrit?
Abhigamana, mm-hmm. Upadana, Ija.
There was something
like that. Yoga, Ija, then Swadhyaya. Then you see as the 16 items are there. Because Swadhyaya is the sixth, it means you have the puja aspects is the 16th item, and then you have further than that in Swadhyaya and expanding those 16 to include 64.
What's yoga?
Yoga is all the purifications, bhuta shuddhis, and all these things to prepare to bring yourself and the paraphernalia up to the spiritual platform like the Lord is. Just like Manasa Puja, the idea of that is now you think about the Lord rather than, you know, what you're going to make for lunch.
Difficult.
Yes, that's what yoga is for. Study. So that's worship of the devotees, the Bhagavatam.
Swadhyaya.
That means chanting. Kirtan, taking care of guests, serving Vaishnavas, serving Tulsi, honoring Prasad, worshipping the Dham. Mm-hmm. That's Swadhyaya. Yes. Means the details will come up in the system of deity worship in the Uddhava Gita. So then you'll have enough details at that point. So you just have to wait till the next volume. Having thus completed the worship in all its aspects in accordance with the prescribed regulations, one should then honor the deity of Lord Hari with prayers and offer obeisances to him by bowing down. 26. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur assigns 51-53 to Bhagavad Akramichi Mala, chapter 12, entitled Devotional Service and Practice, Sadhana Bhakti, which is in the Abhideya section of the Thakur's book. The worshipper should become fully absorbed in meditating upon himself as an eternal servant of the Lord, and should thus perfectly worship the deity, remembering that the deity is also situated within his heart. Then he should take the remnants of the Lord's paraphernalia, such as flower garlands upon his head, and respectfully put the deity back in his own place, thus concluding the worship. Thus the worshipper of the Supreme Lord should recognize that the personality of Godhead is all-pervading, and should worship him through his presence and fire, the sun, water, and other elements. Right? So it's the deity who is in everything. Right? That's what you're saying. And in the heart of the guest, one receives in one's home and also in one's own heart. In this way, the worshipable will very soon achieve liberation. Because Kapila Muni mentions that you worship the deity but don't respect the devotees and other living entities, then the deity is not that pleased with the worship. He's just too neophyte. It's too kanista. So as you start to respect the devotees and living entities, then it takes on that madhyama, then it that has you know, it's more pleasing. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. Karma yoga, which includes a bhakti and ahangropasana, is better than the previously described karma yoga, since one more quickly attains liberation. Right? The previous karma yoga is you're performing basically karma and then connecting it to Krishna. Now, here it's been describing karma yoga means you're engaging your activities in Krishna's service. So there may be that aspect of renunciation or sannyas, but you see by this lifetime, very easily turns into sannyas. Right? It's not just I'm doing. So the first one is my karma, my results, then I give to Krishna, you know, and to what degree and how much. The more that continues, the better it gets. Then it comes to the point where I'm doing the karma to please Krishna. Right? But it's not counted as jnana yoga because it's not just contemplating the philosophy and trying to apply it from there. You're doing these practical activities. Right? The deity worship. However, one should understand that pure bhakti is referred to with the words Bhagavatam Dharman in verses such as Srimad Bhagavatam 11.2.34 and 11.3.3.22. Right? So that's actually the standard. Because otherwise you can worship the deity and all this nicely, but not be so absorbed in the Lord. Though that's what you're supposed to be, as you see. You see as the Lord's presence in everything. That's the Uttama platform. So by performing this deity worship, you can start down on lower levels of karma, bring it right up through to sannyas, and take it on to the Uttama understanding. Right? Conclusion. Even the greatest learned scholars are bewildered in their attempts to understand the science of action if they neglect the authority of Vedic knowledge. One, the illusory energy of the Supreme Lord. The Supreme Personality of Godhead created the material bodies of the conditioned souls so that they may cultivate either sense gratification or ultimate liberation. The conditioned soul misidentifies the created material body with his actual self and thus engages in various fruitive activities. Impelled by the reactions of his own activities, he repeatedly takes birth in various species of life and thus suffers greatly until the end, until the time of the cosmic annihilation. Right, so when you misidentify with the body, you perform activities in connection with the body for the benefit of the body, you know, of the body, by the body, for the body, you know, that standard, you know, how you say. Yes. And so then from that, then you take repeated birth and death, you suffer for all the, you know, all this involvement because it doesn't actually give happiness to the soul. Right? Two, the method of crossing over the illusory energy of the Lord. Therefore, any person who seriously desires to find permanent relief from the sufferings of material existence should take shelter of the lotus feet of a bona fide spiritual master. By chanting the glories of the Supreme Personality of Godhead in the association of devotees, one becomes satisfied and happy and develops a loving friendship with the devotees. In this way, one becomes able to give up material sense gratification, which is the cause of all suffering. Right? So here, this sense gratification is then giving that up. That's anartha nivritti, because that's what you're giving up. Right? And so then, how is that doing? By having a good friendship, you know, a loving friendship with the devotees. That's what then gives that. So if you're cultivating that aspect, then anartha nivritti becomes easy. Yes. Right? So from hearing from the devotees, hearing from the bona fide spiritual master, then we develop that faith, and then that being cultivated in the association of devotees, we take up the process. In that, by developing that relationship with devotees, we give up our attachment. So anartha nivritti. Right? When a devotee attains the stage of pure love of Godhead, he easily crosses over the illusory energy, Maya, which is extremely difficult to cross. Because if you're situated on a prema, oh, what's material? You don't see anything in that way. So you're always absorbed in Krishna. So you have completely crossed over the material situation. Does that make sense? So you no longer have to be functioning within the Mahatattva. Right? So then you can take part in the pastimes beyond the material. Even though up to that point, as you take advance, you're not influenced by the material energy, but you're still within the Mahatattva. You're still within the Lord's pastimes in the Bhauma Leela. Then you come to the point where you don't even have to be there. You may come for preaching, but you don't have to be here. But until you get to prema, you have to be here. Because that's the point of tatasta. You have that choice. But as soon as you come to prema, then one is so situated in the fire of devotional service that one is no longer acts in a tatasta position. You're tatasta shakti, but you don't act just like iron is iron. It's in fire, but it acts like fire, not iron. Right? It's not cold and dark, it's hot and bright. So then the soul, the tatasta living entity, then functions as if they are internal potency. They'll always be jivas, but you're in that fire. You'll never come out of that fire. Does that make sense? So you see, once they get you up to the point of crossing Anartha Nivriti, then they don't really have to discuss much more. Very quickly it goes up to prema. So actually the slow part is getting to be steady in devotional service, which can be done quite quickly, but that's actually where it will be difficult. It plods along. But once you get to nishta, then things speed up. Once you get to taste, then, you know, it's just a matter of time before it goes to prema. 3, the transcendental situation of the Supreme Lord. Situated within the temporary and constantly changing material world, the Supreme Lord remains eternal and unchanging. He cannot be understood by the unaided mind or senses. And he is transcendental to the manifestations of the material world. Although he is originally one, by expanding his illusory potency, he appears in many different forms. He is always free from birth, growth, decay, and death. And he is the super soul, the all-pervading witness who perceives the mentalities of all living entities. He is the supreme Brahman and is known as Narayana. Right? So all the different aspects of him, Brahman, Paramatma, Bhagavan, then have been explained. That's his situation. The material world comes from him. He's unaffected by it. He's here, he's sanctioning, it's his potencies that are working, but he does not become involved. He's always transcendentally situated. And he's beyond all these difficult temporary situations we're in. Birth, growth, decay, and death. Right? Because that's really what's going on. You know, maintenance is one of the 6, but, you know, how long is maintenance? Right? Does that make sense? Yeah, that's the whole point. 4, when you expand, you reproduce, that's when decay and death start coming on quicker, right? It speeds up the process. 4, karma yoga. How to cross over the illusory energy and attain the transcendental situation of the Lord by using our attachment to matter. Through authorized study of the transcendental Vedic literature, one can properly understand the meaning of prescribed duties, non-performance of such duties, and forbidden activities. This difficult subject matter can never be understood by mundane speculation. Vedic injunctions indirectly lead one to the path of ultimate liberation by first prescribing fruit of religious activities, just as the father promises the child candy so that the child will take his medicine, right? And then we saw from there, he just goes up to that point where you're just, like it says in the second one, always absorbed in the Lord. Like that. Is that good? So chapter 4, Drumila explains the incarnations of Godhead to King Nimi, Pratigya. One can cross over the ocean of material existence only by surrendering to the Lord. Right? There isn't another process. There is no other philosophy, no other method. It is the method. Right? Chapter 4 summarizes questions and answers. Vyaj Nimi asks the Navayogendras question 11.9 of Srimad Bhagavatam from 11.41. King Nimi said, "The Supreme Personality of Godhead descends into the material world by his internal potency and according to his own desire. Therefore, please tell us about the various pastimes Lord Hari has performed in the past, is performing now, and will perform in this world in the future in his various incarnations." Drumila answers this question in the rest of this chapter. Okay, so he gets a whole chapter. Adhyaya Prakashika. In the 4th chapter, Drumila describes Narayana, his avatars, qualities, and pastimes. Sardarta Darshani 11.4.1. The various forms of the past, present, and future incarnations of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Hari, and the various transcendental characteristics of each of these avatars constitute the subject matter of this chapter. Even if it were ever possible to count all the particles of dust on the face of the earth, any attempt to count all the innumerable transcendental qualities of the unlimited Lord Hari, the foundation of all potencies, would be simply madness. Right? So they're comparing that, even if it were possible to count all the particles of dust, which basically would be impossible.
Yes.
And so, saying even if you could do that, you still couldn't count the glories of the Lord in his incarnations. The personality of Godhead, Narayana, created the universe out of the five elements manufactured by his own Maya. Entered into that universe in the form of the Supersoul and became known as Purusha Avatar. He effects the work of creation in the mode of passion through the personal form of Brahma, a protection in the mode of goodness through the form of the Lord of Sacrifice, Vishnu, and of annihilation in the mode of ignorance through the form of Rudra. Incarnating the form of Naranarayana, the greatest of sages, from the womb of Murti, the daughter of Daksha and wife of Dharma, he preached by his own practical demonstration the science of Naishkarmya. Well, that's interesting. Dharma. So that means Yamaraj's, because he's a Mahabhagavat, and his sons are Naranarayana Rishi. Okay. He preached by his own practical demonstration. Is that that Dharma, or this is a different Dharma?
We may come up, maybe.
It will come up, okay. He preached by his own practical demonstration the science of Naishkarmyam. Because Naishkarmya means you perform the activity without attachment to the results. Mm-hmm. So, that's the Vedic principle. The prescribed duties are to be performed without attachment to the results. Mm-hmm. Right? That's that. We have to understand what that means. That means we're fully committed to getting a good result, but we're not attached to the result. This is now where it becomes very difficult to understand, because in the standard material context, but especially the non-Vedic context, then if I'm not interested in the result, I don't do the work, right? Like the jnanis, right? So there's no understanding of this, but the point is you have to do work, and the more you're attached to the results, generally the less the quality of the result you get. Mm-hmm. So even materially, even you're a gross materialist, you can only get you good work by Naishkarmya. You have to be detached, because at the time you're attached, you want a result, you're matching what situation you're in now, the work that you're doing, with the result you want to get. And you're making adjustments to make sure it's going in that direction. If you're attached, then you won't have the patience. You won't use the intelligence. You won't be able to adjust as things change. You'll be stubborn. Right? In other words, stubborn means you're going to do it whatever way you want to do it, whether it's the right thing to do or not. Situation changed, you're not changing. That's stubborn. Determined is you'll get the work done. No matter how it changes, you'll adjust to make it work. You can only do that if you're detached. Stubborn means you're attached. Determined means you're focused. Does that make sense? Yeah. So, even the gross materialists, they have to function on Naishkarmya. Just to get the immediate results or whatever it is. They're interested in the art and the karma. Right? Still, you have to practice that. Right? You see, that's the successful people, they're able to do that. While they're performing the activity, they can act in a detached way. Once they get the results, then you'll see they're totally attached. But that makes the difference between the successful person and the not successful. They can function in the present with detachment. So they use their intelligence, perform the proper duties, make adjustments as necessary, using the intelligence as things change. That's why they're successful. The unsuccessful person is attached, thinking of the future, lamenting about the past, not in the present, doesn't make adjustments, doesn't use the intelligence, becomes bewildered by his emotions. And we're just talking gross materialism here. Mm-hmm. Right? So you have to follow Naishkarmya. It's just the eternal principle. Then, if you move up to Dharma, then by following the duties that are prescribed by Scripture with detachment, then you can elevate yourself to higher and higher material positions. Right? So that's called piety. Now, if you don't want that, you want to be freed from karma, you have to perform the karma without an attachment to the result. That will give you liberation. Right? And then for the devotee, they perform the same prescribed duties without attachment to the result, because they want to offer that result to please Krishna. They get bhakti. So we see is the Vedic system is, if you're attached, it doesn't work. Right? People say, no, but without attachment you're not inspired and this and that. Yes, but when you're actually working, if you're attached, it just doesn't work. You have to see the situation. Does that make sense? Yes? Is it practical? No? Yeah. You know, it's just like, let's say something goes wrong. You have the child, something goes wrong. The child's in a dangerous position, then some relative is there because of attachment. They're just so freaked out by it, they can't do anything. And then someone else, looking at the situation without the attachment, but seeing the necessity, just goes in and immediately does something. Does that make sense? That's the whole point where we're meeting. So there isn't any situation where it doesn't work. Your motive for that detachment may be for the, at the time of operation may be attachment, and getting the result you're attached. But at the time of performance, you have to be detached. And this detached means doesn't mean I don't care. It means I'm not worried about the results for myself. I'm worried about applying the system so I get results. Like that? Does that make sense? Any of the 50 self-help gurus will tell you that one? No. But that'll make all of their systems work. And without them, then it won't work. Underlying, if you look between the lines, they're saying that, but they don't even know they're saying that.
So, chapter 7th canto, detachment discussed by Hiranyakashipu.
Yes.
Whole chapter is about detachment and how we are not the body, we are the soul, everything.
Yeah. By the grossest materialist the world, the universe has ever known. Like that. And he's successful. You know, it's like people worrying about, okay, what should I do about the influence of this planet or that planet? He just goes and ties them up and just puts them where he wants them and says, now you do this.
Okay. Sixth canto of Ramayana, there are minimum four shlokas by Ravana himself discussing very frankly that Ram and his entourage are undefeatable and this is going to happen, that they are too powerful.
Is this before or after the battle?
While the battle is going on.
Oh, okay.
As every one of his generals die. So he keeps saying,
he's saying that. But because of attachment, he just has to go on. But I even heard that at the end, you know, before he died, Ram brought Lakshman to hear from him the duties of kings and all that. Yeah? You know, just like Yudhishthir and that went to Bhishma Dev and heard like this. So, you know, he knew what he was talking about, just he was too attached. That's the problem. Okay. When Cupid, Kandarpa, and his hosts were sent to Badrik Ashram by King Indra, who had become fearful and envious at seeing the austerities of Lord Narayana, the best sages welcomed Cupid as an honored guest. The pacified Cupid then offered prayers to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So we see it's like Markandeya just totally ignored him. And then they all, you know, like that. Lord Shiva burned him to ashes. Narayan, they're so cool. They just invite him, sit down like that. They hosted him. And they go, okay. What can you do? Like that. Okay. By the order of the sage, Cupid returned from there with Urvasi, and upon presenting himself before Indra, related to him everything that had taken place. Okay, so there's different ways that Urvasi is sent. So there's always Urvasi gets sent, but then this seems to be a different way. The personality of Godhead, Lord Vishnu, has appeared in various partial incarnations for the benefit of the entire world and has given instructions in spiritual knowledge in the forms of Hamsa, Dattatreya, Shanaka, and the other Kumara brothers, and Rishabdev. In the forms of Hayagriva. Okay, so that's on spiritual knowledge. Okay, Hamsa, Dattatreya, Shanaka, and the four Kumaras, and Rishabdev. In the form of Hayagriva, he killed the demon Madhu and saved all the Vedas. In the avatar of Matsya, the fish, he protected both the earth and Satyavrata Manu. In the incarnation of Varaha, the boar, he delivered the earth and destroyed Hiranyaksha. In that of Kurma, the tortoise, he carried Mundara Mountain upon his back. And in the form of Sri Hari, he gave liberation to the king of the elephants. The Lord delivered the Valakilyas, who had been trapped in the water of a cow's hoofprint. Right? They're really small. And there's 60,000 of them. Right? So 60,000 of them are trapped in the hoofprint of the water in the hoofprint of a cow. He delivered Indra from the reaction for murdering a Brahmin. And he delivered the wives of the demigods from imprisonment in the palaces of the demoniac Asuras. In the avatar of Nrsimha, he killed Hiranyakashipu. In the reign of Ichimanu, he kills the demons, fills the needs of the demigods, and protects all the planetary systems. Right? That's the Manvantara avatar. Means there's always every Manvantara, there's an avatar that will kill the demons, remove all the obstacles for the demigods.
What's the difference between Manvantara avatar and Yuga avatar? In the
because the Manvantara is 71 Mahayugas. Right, so all four yugas, 71 times, that's a Manvantara. While the Yuga avatar means it's such a yuga, then he's the avatar for that.
Can we say that the Yuga avatar is the one that propounds the system of worship for the particular age?
Yes, yes. And the Manvantara?
Protects
Indra and removes the obstacles for the demigods, yes. And protects all the planetary systems, right? So you don't have to worry the aliens are going to come and walk off and do all that. Krishna will take care of it, yes. And even if they do, he'll get it back. In the form of Vamana, the dwarf Brahmin boy, he cheated Bali Maharaj. In the form of Parasuram, he rid the earth of Kshatriyas 21 times. And in the form of Sri Ram, he brought the ocean under his submission and killed Ravana. Descending into the Yadu dynasty, he removed the burden of the earth. In the form of Buddha, by his argumentative preaching in defiance of the Vedas, he bewildered the demons who are unqualified to perform sacrifices. And at the end of Kali Yuga, he will destroy the Shudra kings in the form of Kalki. In this way, the innumerable appearance and the activities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Hari, are described. Shloka Anusharana. Some of your verses. Verses 1 to 23. Maharaj Nimi's seventh question answered by Drumila. Verses 1 to 23. King Nimi said, "The Supreme Personality of Godhead descends into the material world by his internal potency and according to his own desire. Therefore, please tell us about the various pastimes of Lord Lord Hari has performed in the past, is performing now, and will perform in this world in the future in his various incarnations." Right? Because they're set, it's standard, so you know what they're going to be. Like that. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. In the last chapter, Srimad Bhagavatam 11.348, it was said that the devotee should worship the Supreme Lord in the particular personal form of the Lord the devotee finds most attractive. What are the various forms of the Lord? Right? Because that's the natural thing. You worship according to the form that you're attracted. So then, what are the Lord's forms? What are the incarnations? This is a question about the avatar forms. It was also said that one should honor the deity with prayers. Srimad Bhagavatam 11.353. Which qualities and activities should be praised? Right? So if you're going to talk, what do you talk about? How do you praise him? This is a question about the activities of the Lord. Thus he asks this question. Right? Because you worship the Lord in a particular form, so you have to know who the Lord is, his incarnations, and you're going to worship, you're going to praise, so you have to know his qualities. Sri Drumila said, "Anyone trying to enumerate or describe fully the unlimited qualities of the unlimited Supreme Lord has the intelligence of a foolish child. Even if a great genius could somehow or other, after a time-consuming endeavor, count all the particles of dust on the surface of the earth, such a genius could never count the attractive qualities of the Personality of Godhead, who is the reservoir of all potencies." Footnote 27. This is confirmed by Lord Brahma in Srimad Bhagavatam 10.14.7. "In time, learned philosophers or scientists might be able to count all the atoms of the earth, the particles of snow, or perhaps even the shining molecules radiating from the sun, the stars and other luminaries. But among these learned men, who could possibly count the unlimited transcendental qualities possessed by you, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who have descended onto the surface of the earth for the benefit of all living entities?" 10:14:7. So this must be the Brahma Vimohan Lila. Right? Srila Bhakti, it's the same one. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakura assigns verse 2 to Bhagavad Arkaramichimala, chapter 5, entitled The Essential Natures of the Energy of the Lord. Bhagavat Shakti Tattvam, right? So they're unlimited and he's the controller of them, which is in the Sambandha section of the Thakura's book. When the primeval Lord Narayana created his universal body out of the five elements produced from himself, and then entered within that universal body by his own plenary portion, he thus became known as the Purusha. Right, so he himself, through his energies, then that transformation, you get the five elements. Right, then. And then with those five elements, then he produces the universal form. Right? Then he enters into that universal form as the Purusha. Right? So he does everything.
It's coming from Vedanta Sutra.
Sorry?
It's coming from Vedanta Sutra.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. Yes. So it's very interesting how he... So he's created the material manifestation, right, all the elements, then from that he creates the universal form, which is him, and then he enters into that and then operates that, because you have the principles of everything, the forms of everything, how they function and all that, the laws governing them, that's Garbhodakshay Vishnu, and then that is, or they're actually operated by the living entity can take part in that, that's Kiradakshay Vishnu or super soul. So then it would count all the levels, the primary, the secondary, so the same thing's happening on all that. It's like as Mahavishnu, then he expands his energy from Rama Devi, then the external potency, then you get the Advaita, the Mahatattva. Right? So now everything's ready. Then the universes. Now he expands into the universes, the Purusha. Right, so that universe is built out of what he gave there, and then he enters that. Then within that, he does the universal form within the universe, and then he enters that. So there's nothing he's not part of. Right? Does that make sense? Even your midnight sandwich, it's still Krishna. Right?
So it's not that bad?
Huh?
No,
it's just a matter of whether you see Krishna is that means that it was actually Krishna that you're attracted to when you come downstairs, and then
part
go through the whole process.
Part of it was that,
yes. Okay.
Krishna in the form
of
sandwich. Krishna in the form of a sandwich.
Krishna in the form of a sandwich, yes.
If you understand like that, it's easy to understand that everything is Brahman.
Everything is Brahman. That's the whole point. There's nothing that's not. That's why the concept that there's a material world actually doesn't exist, right? Mm. Means it's an idea, because actually it's all Brahman, right? There's nothing that's not Brahman. But the point is because you see it separate then from Krishna, you don't see it as an aspect of Krishna's energies and that aspect in his in expansion of him in the form of that Brahman. Then that's why it takes on the characteristic of illusion. Right? And that because he's eternal, so if you're seeing things without connecting it to him, it has to be temporary. But, what I'm saying? So the effect is temporary. It is temporary because the effect is temporary. But you see in connection with Krishna that it's eternal. It gives the eternal result. Right? And that eternal result then means bhakti. Does that make sense? So we don't have any problem with these various aspects of the Lord because it's Krishna. One of his features is Brahman. Mm-hmm. It's not that it's a separate aspect or it's superior.
Yes.
He's superior to the Brahman aspect. The personal is superior to the impersonal.
Mm-hmm.
So everything's him. So if one sees in that way, like it's been recommended now, we started seeing since the 9th canto, very strongly recommending all through 10th, now we see in the 11th, just in the beginning, and so many times it's been mentioned, about seeing everything coming from Krishna and Krishna in everything.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Everything's in him and he's in everything.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
At the same time, he is a person, is separate from it all.
Yes.
So all these different aspects, the more one sees that way, the more one can always be Krishna conscious. You know what I'm saying? Because it means that, that sandwich is, it's the attractive aspect of it is Krishna. We're thinking it's, you know, the ingredients that it is, the quality of the ingredients, or, you know, that what do you call it? You're sneaking down there and getting everything before it's left over in the morning so that others eat it. You've already eaten how much you want because in the morning you have to share it. Whatever is the reason you're inspired, the taste that you get, the hunger, that's all him because he's Vaishrana, so he's hunger. Like that. And so then that dealing with the hunger, he is the taste.
Yes.
Right? You know, it's just that how many things can you say in the Bhagavad Gita? Therefore, he's the taste of water. Because without water, if you took all the moisture out of that sandwich, you'd have dust. How nice is that going to be? Right? No, because there's water there. That's why it has taste. So all things have taste because there's water in it. Right? Even those who don't drink water, actually the alcohol is still made with water. Like that. So, yeah. So the whole point is this. So therefore, by saying that, you've said all the others. You don't have to say, I am the taste of sandwich. Right? You don't have to, like that. Does that make sense? Yeah.
So
he's also the taste of baklava. Just to make sure. Yes.
So in Krishna consciousness, Brahman, Paramatma, Bhagavan is all intermingled.
Because Krishna, he's personal. He's a person.
Yes.
But he also has an impersonal aspect by which he pervades everything. That's Brahman. So it's just the effulgence of his body. It's the effulgence of his good qualities. These unlimited qualities, when you see them connected with him as a person, there is personal qualities. But when we just see that the qualities on their own are ever expanding unlimitedly, that's the impersonal. That's the Brahman with those qualities. And then Paramatma is how he localized, expands into everything. And why we say localized is Krishna, is Bhagavan. But we're not dealing with him as Bhagavan, so he only comes to, you know, be the witness and the judge and on all these things, and he only does that specific activity. So then we'll say localized. He's there just for that activity.
But it's all there.
Yes, it's all Krishna, but you can still tell the difference. Means Brahman, Paramatma, Bhagavan are all one person, but at the same time you can tell the difference in the features. So we don't take the impersonal Brahman to be the same as Krishna. No. Like that. But from the aspects of the Brahman, we'll remember Krishna because that's where it comes from. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like you see something that belongs to somebody, it reminds you of the person. You know the person, so it reminds you of the person. You don't know the person, you just go, hey, why is that sitting here? You understand? So that's the difference. So for the devotees, when they think of everything as Krishna, Krishna's in everything, they just remember him. Right? And for those who don't know, then you mention, you see something, you're thinking, oh, that has a standing on its own. No, it's because Krishna's there. That's why it's that. You know, let's say the cheddarness of the cheddar is Krishna. But at the same time, as if you'll think, well, the cheddar and Krishna are the same, that's why then Krishna says, I am all this, but I'm beyond. Because then one might get distracted by these impersonal and Paramatma aspects and forget about Bhagavan, so he's beyond. But those who always remember Bhagavan, then them knowing everything is Krishna and Krishna is in everything, then they just see everything reminds them of the person. Does that make sense? So that's why you see that aspect is then a more advanced understanding. But if it doesn't remind you of Krishna, then there's all kinds of points that are pointed out so that you are reminded to remember the person. And to avoid that the impersonal stands on its own, and there is no person, or the impersonal is the supreme, all these various aspects. So there's a lot of technical discussion down at that end. And at the other end, they simply mention the points. And what technical stuff they do mention, we can't understand at all. So.
What we are studying now, it is a vision of the Uttama Adhikari.
Yes, but they're presenting it for Maharaj Nimi, so that all the different, and he's asking questions also. Remember those last chapter, he was asking the question about karma, so that all these karmic Brahmins, you know, in his court, you know, Karmakanda Brahmins, then they would hear about actually, you know, what's beyond that, and that there's something more. And that they might get, you know, benefited and elevated. Like that. So, yeah. But that's the point. The Uttama, because most of what you see, especially from the seventh canto on, you're dealing with pure devotees. Like that. And occasionally, then you're dealing with something that's, you know, out that shows that the rules are secondary and the primary is Krishna consciousness. Because we're used to, the rules are here, that's the way it has to be. Those rules make Krishna consciousness. But you see, from seventh canto, they start telling you, no, it's devotional service makes the rules Krishna conscious. And the rules are the natural way to express Krishna consciousness. But Krishna consciousness is independent of the rules. It's independent. The conditioned soul's not. The liberated soul, yes, but the conditioned soul, no. That's why then they follow, because they identify with conditioned. So you follow the rules. But at the same time, without the rules, how do you have pastimes? Right? Then we're going to end up with Calvin Ball or something. So, you know, you just change the rules as you go just to suit yourself. Right? You know, you and your friend, okay, first one to the pillar wins. And then when he gets there, just before he gets there, before you, you say, well, actually, back to that pillar. And since you're already a little bit behind, you just turn around, and then that way you can get there. So you just keep changing the rules to, you know what I'm saying? Kids do that, yeah. Yes. Yes, all the time.
And then complain.
Huh?
And then complain when you do.
Yeah, and then complain, yes. No, because the point is they have to, it has to be in favor of them. See, that's the principle of those rules. It favors them. And so if you do the same thing, it's not actually following the actual spirit. You're following the external form of the rule, just like a smarta would. You don't understand the internal purpose of the rule, which is that they get what they want, how they want, when they want. Like that. So that's the whole point. It's the internal understanding that's the important, not the external. Yes. But the point is this principle is being applied on the mundane plane. Now, if you apply that where Krishna, it's always about Krishna winning, then it works fine. Right? You finished Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakura, right?
No.
But which Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakura? Because we have three Drumilas and two Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakura.
What's
the first one?
First one.
Okay, we stopped there. At just finish. Okay, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakura elaborates. He describes the Purusha avatars in two verses. Then Bhagavan accepts the form of the Purusha as the creator of the Mahatattva. Then, producing the universe by the elements, he enters into it with his expansion. Right? So the Purusha then he expands his Garbhadaksha and Kiradaksha.
Here it is Mahavishnu.
Yes, means you're describing the Purusha avatars. And so Bhagavan then accepts that position of the Purusha avatar as the creator of Mahatattva. Then you produce the universes out of the elements of that Mahatattva. So this is all Karanodakshaya Vishnu. He entered into it with his expansion, right? So then he enters as Garbhodakshaya Vishnu. And then Garbhodakshaya Vishnu, now having created the universal form out of the elements that are from him, then enters it as Kiradakshaya. So then you get all three. Like that, yeah. Sri Drumila continued. Within his body are elaborately arranged the three planetary systems of this universe. His transcendental senses generate the knowledge acquiring and active senses of all embodied beings. His consciousness generates conditioned knowledge, and his powerful breathing produces the bodily strength, sensory power, and conditioned activities of the embodied souls, right? Because that all comes from prana. So because of the Lord's breathing, therefore the living entities, then they have bodily strength, sensory power, and all the conditioned activities that they can perform. Because without prana, you can't do anything. Right? He is the prime mover through the agency of the material mode of goodness, passion, and ignorance. And thus, the universe is created, maintained, and annihilated. So he does all these different things. So when you see it as Krishna, then you don't see the difference. Like we see as the Dasavatar Shloka, the song. Then there, Jayadeva is pointing out that Krishna has come as all these. Right? He comes as these and performs all these pastimes. So it's just Keshava who's performing these. So that's the whole thing, is they're seeing everything as it is and seeing that it's all Krishna. Mm-hmm.
Now, if you understand that, it's more easy to surrender.
Yes, yes. That's the whole idea, because then all there is Krishna. So what's the alternative? You know what I'm saying? It's just there isn't something else, so you can't, you know, which rock do you pick? This one or this one? You can choose this one or this one, right? But it's only, there is only Krishna in just unlimited variety of ways. So then when that's understood, then there's only Krishna, so then you surrender. Because how is our material consciousness based? What's the foundation? That you can do things that don't have Krishna. I can control, I can enjoy, I can function separate from Krishna. And so that's the consciousness. So that's, they're given the benefits of conditioned consciousness, which is, you know, temporariness, birth, death, old age, disease, suffering, you know, the whole package. And it's equally distributed to one and all, right? So, but for Krishna, when you understand is everything's Krishna, whatever I'm doing is purposes, its purpose is Krishna, the result's Krishna, the technique is Krishna, the knowledge how to do that technique is Krishna, then all there's left to do is surrender to Krishna, because the secondary is still Krishna. It's just the supporting roles. Just as there's Bhagavan and Brahman and Paramatma in supporting roles, the secondary is in the supporting role for the primary, which is Krishna. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's what's happening. So it's just natural. So then, seeing like that, then someone can't always be absorbed in Krishna, because there isn't anything separate. Right? But you see, this is not emphasized in the beginning of the Bhagavatam, because this particular technical vision is there, that of the Uttamas. Yes. But it's described so that others can appreciate and start to use that, and they'll get success, but they won't see like that all the time. Prema means this all the time. So if it's occasional that comes up, it's not called prema. Yes. It's the same quality, but it's not called prema because it's not constant. Right? It's in the bud form, because then prema is fully bloomed, so it's in the bud form. And so it's called bhava, right? But now if it's not constant, also ecstasy, then it takes on the quality that's there. If it's just the very beginning, then it's called shraddha.
Yes.
It's, you know, a little bit more growing, then it's called, how is it called? Sadhu sangha. A little bit more bhajana kriya, like this, until it gets to bhava. Right? So so it takes on that because it's not always there. So this knowledge we can use. And sometimes it'll work nicely for us, sometimes it won't.
Yes.
But the point is if we value it and we make that attempt, then gradually Krishna will reveal. Because he's knowledge, he's remembrance, he's forgetfulness. So we want to forget Krishna, so he allows it. Right? And then when you want to remember, then you remember. So, yeah.
Simple,
yeah. That's the point, it's so simple. You know, but Prabhupada said it's simple but sublime. So there's so much, the detail of it is very sophisticated, but it's actually extremely simple. Krishna consciousness is the most simple. But,
We may be complicated.
Yes, because of impurity. So that simple works for those who are pure at heart. They can function on that simple. But they can also simultaneously appreciate all the detail that's there. As you see, the acharyas, it's some verses on talking on some aspect of the pastime. They see, you know, the Lord's reason for doing it, or the mood of there, the mood of the devotees, like this, all these kinds of things. And the next one is talking some technical point. And then they can give all the technical, you know, jargon and explanations and everything. You know, so that's the thing. So the verses there in the Bhagavatam, and depending upon what it is, they either explain the rasa that's going on there or the tattva that's going on there. So that's the point. You know Krishna, you know all this. That's the point, because everything's Krishna. So what's, you know, if you know Krishna, you know everything. So whatever is necessary for you to know and understand and use, Krishna will reveal.
Even to understand that it is simple, it takes 9 cantos.
Yeah.
So much of study.
Like that. Then you have the example, and now here they're, you know, drilling it in. So, just making sure. But these last 6 cantos, that's what they're doing. First 6 cantos are setting the, you know, the foundation so that you know how to perform devotional service, like the first 6 chapters of Gita.
Yes.
Right? But at the same time explaining the glories of the Lord and devotional service. But you see a lot of that explained. But then the last 6 cantos, then what's being explained is just the aspect of pure devotion. Like that. So, Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. This verse describes the qualities and activities of the Purusha. In the body of Mahavishnu, Yat Kaye, in each of his pores, an assembly of millions and millions of universes with upper, lower, and middle planets resides. In each of his pores. You know, we're thinking one pore, one universe, and then, you know, then so many come. But the point is millions are there, so you see them, they're all coming out. They're all just so.
It doesn't really matter for us on this point.
Yeah, at this point it doesn't matter. Okay. Millions aren't trillions. Hey, we're cool. By the Lord's senses, the knowledge and actions, probably knowledge and
action senses
of the collective and individual jivas arise, because you can only take part of what's available, right? You can't use something that's not there. So the power of the senses has been created by the Lord. That potency is there, right? For all, and then specifically each individual, what you get from there, right? You have the storehouse of what the sense can do. Then you have, according to your karma, what you deserve. Not how much you want, what you deserve. Because what you deserve is based on what you do. Right? So what you want, if you don't do according to what will get you that, then you'll get something else or less. Right? So, yeah.
So we need to make the connection.
Yes,
to that's... Want and to do and means to want and to act, same.
Yes, that's same. Why. Yes, that's why there was so much emphasis on that the Vedic literatures give the rules and regulations and the process for human life to go on. And then you follow that under the direction of the spiritual master and move forward.
Yes.
Right? So you have desire, material desire. That's what karma yoga was described. But the modern thing is, just because I have desire, that's the reason it happens. They even have a philosophy, right? The law of attraction. I just think about it and desire it, and I'll just attract the whole universe to me as if I'm the center of the universe. So the point is if, by me thinking that way, and anything within the universe, supposedly I can attract, you know, like that, okay. But then every living entity is doing that. So how is that arranged that everybody is thinking that way and everybody can get what they are going to deserve? Who's arranging that? How is that controlled? That doesn't come up in the conversation at all. So therefore, wouldn't there be some connection to, is it just that my mind and my desire is actually the controller of the universe, because the universe goes however it likes. It doesn't seem to care about my desire, right? Because if it did, then I'm sure people would work out a lot different, right? Would you have to sit through 12 years of classes to understand all this? No, you just know it automatically, or you could sit there and just by touching the book you would know, or, you know, if you want to do the fun, you know, the, what do you call it, the cliche, you just look through it like this and, you know, see it all, or, you know, whatever it is you do. And then you know,
yes,
right? But of course, you have to go through the process. And why? Because that's the law given by Krishna.
Not necessarily you know. Huh? Not necessarily you will
know. No, because with devotion, then you'll know. If you think it's just the knowledge I'll know, then you won't know. Right?
And it must be constant.
Yes, yes, and it must be constant. Yeah, all these things just... In other words, why is it a difficulty? Because the mode of ignorance makes you lazy. You just want this quick solution. But the problem is since mode of ignorance is opposite of what's reality, there is no such thing as quick solution. Everything is work. But, if you're looking for a quick solution, that's surrender to Krishna. Then you accomplish everything. But somehow the mode of ignorance doesn't take that as an option. No, it's only if I work, then I'll get. If I depend on Krishna, how am I to be sure? But if I work, do I always get what I want? So how can you be sure? Right? And that's where you end up then with the French existential, you know, do I even exist? You know, that kind of jazz. So they take it very far. I was thinking, if you present it nicely and intellectually and poetically, that by nature the French are so critical of everything, that all these points about the material world, material life, they would appreciate if you present it right. Right? It's not a problem, because they spend all day just criticizing everything anyway. That's the taste, right? You know, so now it's just a matter of connecting that to Krishna. And then, what is it? Voila! Yeah, you're done.
But I think in France, the proximity aspect can be very much appreciated.
Yes, yes, by the proximity that you take on that, yes. By the social thing. And as soon as you go away, then... You know, because then you take on the proximity of this one. Yes. And then when he goes to the bathroom, then that guy comes back, and you talk about him. I once saw that. I was sitting there, three devotees. And, you know, they were there for hours. And as each one, and they're all talking, goofing on, the three of them together are goofing on a fourth party. As soon as one of them leaves to go to the bathroom, the two that are left goof on the guy who went to the bathroom. And then when he comes back, it goes back to whatever it was before. And when anyone else, they always like that. So whoever was not, you're criticizing them. And then as soon as they come back, so the point is just to criticize. And so they're great friends because they can all relate to the same kind of criticism. You know, I mean, then how to criticize and all that, you know. It's like, that guy, he doesn't know how to criticize. You know, should we invite him over? Nah, he doesn't know how to criticize. You know, so.
Like-minded.
Sorry?
Like-minded.
Yes, like-minded.
I think you need to come to France.
No. Like that. They criticize all kinds of things. Well, at least the criticizing the American paradigm would go over big, right? You know, like that.
Nice croissant.
Huh?
And nice food. You get
it. Nice food. Yeah. You know how to cook. Yeah. You know, it's just like in the Middle East, then cooking food means Lebanese. You know, so in Europe, food means French. You know, cooking is there. And that probably the reason that it's so good is because of, as I had heard from authorities, because of three ingredients. Butter, butter, and butter. And that's why French cooking is the best. And so they just know varieties of ways to add butter to something. Right? Like that.
Yeah, Middle East olives.
Yes, yeah, yeah. Yes. Wow. And that was all how the Lord is prana, right? We got all that. Okay. So that's what we're saying. There's unlimited inside, right? You know? Oh, by the Lord's senses, the knowledge and action senses of the collective and individual jivas arrive. From Antaryami, his expansion, the knowledge of the jivas arise. Right? So, because super soul is there, therefore you have knowledge. He says he's knowledge, remembrance, and forgetfulness. From the Lord's prana, the bodily strength, balam, sensual strength, ojas, and activities of the jivas arise. He is the real cause of the activities of creation, maintenance, and destruction throughout the three gunas. So he's the one behind all these. That's why you see with this kind of knowledge, Uttamadhikari never becomes bewildered. You can't defeat them in an argument. Others you can, by the logic, by this, to become bewildered, but you can't because it's all Krishna. So where can you deviate from? It's simple. It goes back to Krishna. Sri Drumila will continue tomorrow. No, day after tomorrow. Om Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare Jai Srila Prabhupada ki Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandini.